ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome to the show. Travis Haney, Braden Gall here on a Thursday edition. 7-1 win for the Preds last night. Back on the ice again tonight. Back-to-back against Edmonton. Puck drop at 8 o'clock, so just set your clocks there. And, of course, Saturday against Calgary before they come home next week and get a couple of games at home on Tuesday and Thursday next week. Travis, at Trav Haney on Twitter. You can follow him there, at Braden Gall. Julian Council producing and intern Calvin hanging out as well. Steve Cavendish joining us here, former editor of the Nashville Scene as well as the Washington Post as well. Steve, welcome to the show, my friend. How are you? Good to talk to you.
Good to hear you guys. Good to hear Travis on the air this morning.
I don't think you know this, Braden, but so Steve and I, you know, we have mutual friends, and we are moving closer and closer to actually meeting in real life. We've now interacted in several different ways. This is like the way things work in 2017. Now we're hearing each other's voices for the first time.
So like you guys first, like you slid up into Steve's DMs first.
Pretty much what happened.
And now you guys have talked to each
email,
other.
Email, and now we're getting closer.
I would love to be the facilitator to help two people that
that was supposed to be our other mutual dearly. Friend Steve Godfrey. He's the one who was trying to facilitate it, and he's very poor at that, evidently. But
it's because Stephen Godfrey has been Stephen Godfrey was
MIA,
like he was kidnapped for like 5 weeks.
Don't
working
worry.
On a story probably about Hugh Freeze somewhere. Steve, sorry to hijack the segment. Steve Cavendish.
No, that's absolutely fine. I just love hearing Travis's voice like this.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's big. Big moment.
Have you seen any papal smoke from the MLS offices yet, or when is that going to happen?
Board of Governors is supposed to meet today, and they're going to vote, but we're not going to they're going to make an announcement on this until next week. So, you know, maybe something will leak out. It's kind of doubtful that it will, but there's going to be a decision. We're going to find out presumably on Monday. They keep saying the 18th through the 20th. I don't know why. I don't know why you have a date range for an announcement that big that's going to affect a couple of cities, but. You know, that's what MLS does sometimes. But the vote's going to be today, and presumably Nashville should get a franchise. If you're going by everything that the league has laid out, Nashville has clearly met all the criteria. It was interesting on the MLS Cup broadcast over the weekend. They had a big interview halftime with Taylor Twellman and Don Garber. And I wondered if Garber kind of subtly let Detroit know that they're not in it, because he was laying out all the cities that he said that we've had so many good cities and bids and so forth, and they're all going to build stadiums. And, you know, Detroit's going to be in Ford Field, at least their bid is right now. And I'm wondering, is that
down to three.
Subtly letting them, you're signaling them early. So that would be, you know, if that's true, then it's Nashville against Cincinnati for that second slot, because Sacramento is going to get the first slot. And then, I think Nashville's got a better bid. They've got a more solid stadium plan. And, you know, if you said to me last year that Nashville's odds were 1-2, I probably would have told you that you were high. But you know, they've come a long way. The bid committee here has done a really good job, and I don't know. We'll see. I think they're going to get it.
Steve, Braden and I have spent some time this week talking about the possibility they're going to get this team, and really how the population will receive it, and whether Nashville can support well a third professional team. You know, you have the kind of in the rear view, the 10 years ago, hanging onto the Preds by a thread. That feels like a really long time ago. Do you think this is the right sport and the right time for Nashville to support and have a third professional team?
Yeah, I think actually it's the only third professional team that they could support, just simply because of the number of dates. If you tried to put an NBA franchise in here with, you know, 40 more home dates a year, say you move the Grizzlies up here, or say there's the kind of lingering baseball support around town. People always saying, oh, well, we always wanted a baseball team. I'm waiting on that. You know, that's 82 home games a year, or 81 home games a year. That's too much. The dynamics of the market will not support that. Soccer with 20 some odd home games a year, yeah, they can support that. So from a pure math standpoint, it's the right thing. I also think you want, you know, Nashville's been pretty good about picking something on the upswing. And you know, they caught the NHL on a good sort of swing up when the Predators franchise came in the late 90s. I think they're catching soccer at the right time. And I think there's enough corporate support and there's enough sort of fan support here to fill a stadium and to certainly have a successful sort of franchise.
Steve Cavendish joining. Go ahead, Steve.
Plus, there's billionaires behind it, so there's always a good chance.
Steve Cavendish joining here, former editor of the Nashville Scene as well as with the Washington Post as well. And the Tennessee Volunteers have settled in a little bit. The recruiting trail a little quiet this week, losing a couple of quarterback commits. But let me ask you just in general. We just talked with Josh Ward from Knoxville and had a lot. We're sort of the next evolution of this Jeremy Pruitt conversation is what is the offense going to look like? What would you like to see Jeremy Pruitt and the Tennessee Vols new coaching regime do as far as an offensive style?
Anything but a traditional pro style, you know, set, and that can take a lot of different forms. It's one of the reasons why I was so intrigued with the Leach possibilities here, because Leach is a really interesting sort of offensive hire. I think he would have fit in well in the SEC. Go look at what Memphis has done the last couple of years. Go look at who used to be at Memphis, who's now at Virginia Tech, who I think is a really, really smart, has built a really, really smart system. There are ways out there to cut this that are different than what's being done in the SEC. I think Tennessee has to look at what a lot of other people are going and take a left or take a right. You do something different. They cannot line up with a one or two back offense and expect to win. And win in this league, the defenses are too good right now. They need something really, really creative. You know, and if they want to come out and do an Oklahoma State style thing where they're going, you know, 4 and 5 wide every play, I'm all right with that. I would be down for something interesting here. I don't know if Pruitt's a defensive guy. We're gonna see exactly, you know, kind of what he's thinking here as he fills out his staff. But I would love to see something a little more exotic than even kind of what Butch Jones was doing this year. Tennessee's problem was they were way too predictable, particularly when you didn't have the threat of Dobbs running from the backfield.
We spent some time earlier in the week too, Steve, kind of ranking these new five SEC hires. We won't count Ole Miss because Matt Luke was already there. But we feel like you can break it down into certain tiers. I guess my question is, how far is the Jeremy Pruitt tier away, in your mind, from where that very top shelf is with Dan Mullen and Jimbo Fisher?
I think Pruitt is a complete unknown. I mean, there's just based off of his coordinating career, and as you know this better than anybody, you know, somebody's coordinating career is so much determined by the people around them, by the particularly like at Bama, it's determined by the infrastructure that was already set up there. And your job is to come in and execute. And I don't know exactly what he's, you know, what we're getting. You have the imprimatur of Saban and of, you know, kind of quality coaches that he's worked for already, which is great, which is kind of the most you can ask for in a top-level assistant. But I just don't think we know. There's not enough of a – you can't look at Bama's defense and go, oh, that's Jeremy Pruitt's track record. You can say he's done a very good job coordinating what is a mighty, magnificent machine, but is Pruitt responsible for
– This is Bama's exactly what we would have said about Kirby Smart, right? And – the fact is, you just don't know. You can't presume that everybody coming out of whatever program it is going to be Kirby Smart at Georgia or Will Muschamp at Florida. Like, you just don't know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Muschamp is a great example. Muschamp is obviously a good coach. I mean, he's had a decent year at South Carolina. There's evidence, I think, of South Carolina maybe turning a corner here at some point in the very near future. But he came out with so much hype into a situation that he was almost destined to fail at. But he learned a lot from, and now he's a pretty good coach. You don't want Tennessee to turn into the place that Jeremy Pruitt learned, and he's going to be a good coach in this next job.
You can follow him on Twitter at S. Cavendish, of course, for all the latest MLS updates and whether or not Nashville will get a franchise or not, and variety of pretty much everything else in the world. Steve, always a pleasure, man. Love talking with you, buddy.
Gentlemen, take care.
One day we're going to introduce you guys.
Soon.
One day we will absolutely introduce you guys. I want to remind everybody, ESPN 102.5 The Game and 94.9 Game 2 is your exclusive home for the Franklin American Mortgage Music City Bowl as the Kentucky Wildcats take on the Wildcats of Northwestern on Friday, December 29th at 3:30 p.m. Our 2017 Music City Bowl coverage is brought to you by Hi-Fi Buys, the Houston Clinic, and RNS Wood Flooring. Also want to remind everybody, continue to tweet at 102.5 The Game. You have an opportunity to win a $100 gift card from a Moments Peace Spa Salon and Day Spa. We'll do that at the end of the show like we have the last couple of days. We'll continue that next week. And let us know why somebody in your life deserves to be treated awfully well, pampered, rest and relaxation. $100 gift card on the line. So tweet us. Creativity is encouraged. When we come back, we're going to have a major soccer announcement for Nashville SC. And what type of offense do we want for the Tennessee Volunteers? We'll do that when we come back right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Make your picks for our Pro Football Pick'em Contest. You have a chance to win awesome prizes, including a trip for two to Hawaii, brought to you by Computer and Communications Innovations in Nashville. Sign up and pick now at thegamenashville.com. We'll get to the Tennessee offense in just a second. What we want to see out of Jeremy Pruitt's offense. Obviously, we know what he's going to do on defense. We'll get to that in a second. However, we do have, as we do, come on, Julian. There we go. Senior Nashville SC correspondent Julian Council with a soccer announcement for the club.
Yeah, give me a sec. Oh, there we go. I got it up. Okay, so we have an announcement. Nashville SC of the United Soccer League announced the signings of Liam Doyle, Bradley Bourgeois, Tucker Hume, and Ryan James to the club's 2018 squad, pending USL and Federation approval. It's going to go through. Don't worry.
Bourgeois.
All four players come to Nashville SC with previous experience in the USL and bring Nashville SC's player count to 13 for next season. Doyle, who's 25, brings an established young defender to the club. Last year, Doyle helped Swope Park Rangers to the USL Cup Final in 2017. He's a third player from Swope Park's team last year who's
just
now joined.
Hemorrhaging players.
Mm-hmm. Just Swope
Park.
Starting
to see a theme here.
Yep, very good theme there. Good USL team getting three of their players, so obviously you can see how competitive Nashville SC should be in their inaugural season. Bourgeois, a 23-year-old American, signed with Houston Dynamo of Major League Soccer in 2015 after 4 years as a defender at the University of Tulsa. Last season, he made his way back to Tulsa with USL's Tulsa Roughnecks. Bourgeois stuffed a stat sheet with his defensive position, leading the club in clearances, interceptions, and aerial duels won. He will join fellow defender Kasuke Kimura in going from Tulsa Roughnecks to Nashville SC. So there we go. There's two guys from Tulsa.
Travis Haney wins a lot of aerial duels, I think. I've seen you do it.
Just total,
nothing to say.
Just total dead
moving
air.
Moving on.
Nothing to say.
Moving on.
By the way, Bourgeois, already my favorite player.
Oh, well, I think I have my favorite player right here. An American, Hume, 24, adds a unique attacking piece for Nashville SC. Standing at 6'5", the North Carolina Tar Heel spent the 2017 season with Ottawa Fury of the USL. Last year, in his debut professional season, Hume tied for third on Ottawa Fury in goals scored despite limited minutes and just 12 starts. And then final player, James, 23, from Canada, has spent the last two seasons with Rochester Rhinos of the USL after being drafted in an MLS Super Draft by Sporting Kansas City. Last year, he logged the most minutes and starts for the Rhinos.
You guys were even there at the same time. Do you know of his prowess?
No, I've never heard of the guy.
Now, the guy they traded for, though, is still the big name acquisition earlier this week. That's although future considerations is still the only thing that this team has given up.
Yeah, Lee Bomoloto, yes.
Yeah.
Who was also from Swope Park, so three.
Just
some kind of Swope Park collusion.
Pillaging and plundering Swope Park.
Do they even want to play anymore? Like, what? Just take all our players.
Bradley Bourgeois.
Serious question.
Defender though, from the United States, my favorite player.
Julian, how does this go about? Obviously, a lot of roster moves this week. In terms of putting together the full roster, where are they on that timeline in terms of when do you want to have what the team is going to look like?
Well, that's a great question, which you can ask Gary Smith tomorrow here at 9:15 on
well done
the morning show.
Cool, I'll do the show tomorrow. Fine.
Unless my math is...
Well, Gary will have a much better understanding of that than I do.
Unless my math is off, that's every week we've been doing this, that's, what, 13, 14 players now currently?
13.
13, I mean, that's... there can't. How many more roster spots are there? Six or seven?
Yeah, they're getting close.
So there's only a couple more of these announcements. So, and obviously, we're proud to be a part of that equation here at ESPN 102.5 The Game. So very cool stuff there. And you can – what time is Coach Smith on with us tomorrow?
9:15.
There you go.
Come for the sports talk. Stay for Julian's blunt honesty.
I think that's pretty fair. I don't have a problem with that.
Never heard of him. Never heard of the guy.
All right, offense for the, Hal Gill going to join us, by the way, coming up in a few minutes. I wanted to quickly, though, because Josh Ward talked about this, Steve Cavendish just talked about this, and you and I haven't really had a chance to dive into this because we don't really know officially what the coaching staff is going to look like. We have really good guesses. A lot of the reports out there that Jeremy Pruitt's coaching staff at Tennessee is going to include Tyson Helton as the offensive coordinator. I don't think a lot of Tennessee fans know a whole lot about him and what they want. Let's forget who the coaches are for a second and just say, what would be ideal? Because right now you've got six defensive coordinators in the SEC East and Dan Mullen. Steve Cavendish just sort of suggested, let's zig when everyone else is zagging, so to speak. What do you want to see the Tennessee offense look like with under the new coaching staff?
I just know what it's going to look like. I don't think there's going to be any zigging. I think it's yeah, going – look yeah, at his track record. Look where he's been. The guy was at Alabama, Florida State, Georgia, and Alabama before that. I mean, I think we
what
know
what the Hoover High offense
we
look
know
like?
What this is going to look like. Tyson Helton last year was at USC. You know, that's a slightly more
still pretty pro style.
It's the same thing with a few more wrinkles and better kind of LA type athletes. I mean, that's pretty much it. I think we know what this is going to look like. And to me, Braden, that's amusing or interesting to me in some ways because this is a program that was really close to hiring Mike Leach. I mean, on the verge of hiring Mike Leach. I don't think I told you this. I ran into
Steve. Jeff Brohm's not too much far off of that.
I ran into Steve Spurrier Jr. in New York, and he said, yeah, Mike Leach called me in the middle of the night a couple weeks ago and said, hey, if I go to Tennessee, I think I'm going to take this job. Do you want to come? I mean, that's how close it was. Mike Leach was already calling people to try and get him on staff. This was going down. And then John Curry's out the next day, and the whole thing gets reset, and you wind up with Jeremy Pruitt and a pro-style offense. So if you're somebody who – if you're looking for – some sex appeal in your offense, ain't happening. I mean, this is, you know what you're going to get here. It's just a matter of variation.
If you are running a dominant defense, then sure, that works just fine. That's fine. You can play that. But because now the reason it works at a place like Tennessee and doesn't, in my opinion, doesn't work at a place like Arkansas or Missouri is that you can recruit at the level that competes with the Floridas and Georgias and Alabamas at Tennessee. You can't beat
that's
Alabama.
That's what they're betting on. I mean, that's what they're banking on here.
That's the plan. And so, like, that's why South Carolina, to me, doesn't make as much sense.
Ole Miss, for instance, what they did to try and counter Bama, yes, that was counter-programming.
Arkansas is the exact problem with this game plan. If you cannot recruit the athletes that Alabama and LSU are recruiting and you're going to try to play their game, you are going to lose almost every time. Tennessee does have the ability to recruit the athletes to go toe-to-toe on a pro-style I-formation situation with Georgia and Florida.
I was going to say, that's
they can do that.
That's the problem here is Georgia is going to try and do the same thing. They are already way ahead of where Tennessee wants to be doing that same thing. They're in the playoff. I mean, they're in the Final Four at this point. Tennessee has a lot of gap to close in terms of talent, and they're not doing it situated in Atlanta, in that area.
Now, he was also the offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach for Jeff Brohm at Western Kentucky. That's a little bit more of an open-up offense.
But I look more at where Pruitt has been, not where Tyson Helton has been. And that, to me, dictates what the overall theme is going
so
to be.
So he's going to try to force a certain style into the –
that's it. It's going to happen. He's seen, okay, he's seen success at the highest level, right? Florida State and Alabama. I mean, less so at Georgia under Rick, but
– I mean, with Lane Kiffin, there were some elements
of the spread. He was in national championship settings at Alabama and Florida State. That's what they're going to try and do.
I mean, I agree with you. What I want to see, though, is – what makes Nick Saban so special – there's a million things, but what makes Nick Saban so good and probably the greatest of all time is his ability to adapt and evolve, especially on defense. They went from these big hulking defensive linemen to these line changes with more versatile, athletic, smaller, faster guys to combat the spread. Well, when he gets Lane Kiffin in there, Lane Kiffin wasn't running an I formation offense. They ran the ball a ton. Gus Malzahn runs the ball a ton, but they do it out of a power spread. There was a little difference there. And so Nick Saban adapted and evolved a little bit.
But it also irritated the bejesus out of him, and he reverted back.
Yes, it did. And we'll find out if that was the right answer or not, right? Like, we'll find out if this year's team with Bo Scarborough and Damian Harris and that great offensive line, when they go head-to-head with the best defensive line in America in 3 weeks, in 2 weeks or whatever, and Clemson's lined up with NFL draft pick next to NFL draft pick next to NFL draft pick on the defensive line, and we'll find out if that gamble works for Nick Saban. But I agree with you. I think we're going to see a pro style, and that's where Jarrett Garantano is the question to me. He doesn't fit into that style of offense at all.
No,
Quentin Dormady might next year, but not Jarrett Garantano.
And I think you make a great point about Dormady, who I think we all thought at one point in the season was gone. I mean, he was halfway out the door, then winds up walking back in. Maybe this is his opportunity to kind of lay claim to that. The only thing I would say is Pruitt was around Alabama teams that had Jalen Hurts. I mean, you can make it work. Right. Is it ideal? Do you see it typically with dual-threat quarterbacks? No, but it can happen.
It'll be very interesting. And again, for those of you who don't know, Tyson Helton, 40 years old, born in Gainesville, Florida, went to the University of Houston, has coached at UAB, Cincinnati, Western Kentucky. So he's coached in the area for a USC guy to come back to this area of the country. He's been in the area, so he certainly knows the region a little bit there. So I don't. The key is with me, I wanted a splashy offensive hire. From an X's and O's standpoint, from a game plan standpoint,
but that wasn't going to happen.
You don't need a recruiter. You already have that as your head coach. You needed an offensive whiz, and we have no idea if that's what Tyson Helton will be or not.
I know a lot of people thought that T. Martin would be willing to come back, and I don't think that was really ever in the cards. I think that was sort of an agent leverage play.
I think that's good for Tennessee,
and I don't have a problem with that. I also was not expecting a splashy hire because that's just not. That's not going to be the DNA of this team. I mean, look what's happening at Georgia. Jim Chaney, who was at Tennessee, who was at Arkansas, who was at Pitt, that was not a splashy hire. And I still have questions about the long-term viability of Georgia's offense.
I agree.
With Jim Chaney there. But it's working for now because guess
11
what?
11 starters came back on defense this year.
It's about running and playing defense, and I think that's what Tennessee's going to want to be.
And Georgia has the running back factory underneath its facility, like Alabama has the linebacker factory underneath its facility. They just churn out cyborgs one after the other. And when you land the number one quarterback recruit in the nation in back-to-back-to-back years, that tends to help your offense as well. Hal Gill going to join us when we come back. Travis Haney, Braden Gall, ESPN 102.5 The Game. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds back on the ice tonight after a 7-1 win last night over Vancouver. Coverage at 7, puck drop at 8 against the Edmonton Oilers. Hal Gill joining us here. Skillsy, how you doing, my friend? What's going on?
Nothing. Just got into Edmonton last night, getting ready for a big game back-to-back.
When you're halfway around the world is when I like to give you a hard time because then I know I'm safe. Have you ever scored a goal from center ice in your entire career?
Actually, I did the fake rim on Patrick Waugh one time. That was the longest I've ever had a goal, and other than an empty net, of course. But that was a tremendous shot by PK, huh? Too hard for him to handle, I guess.
It had some heat on it. It really did. I mean, we've talked about a 7-goal performance, 7-1 win. If I had to ask you right now, which Nashville Predator is playing the best hockey, where do you begin that conversation?
Well, that's so hard to say because I think there's, as a team right now, they're too much to handle for other teams when they're clicking. And it hasn't been, I don't think it's been smooth sailing, but every game, but I think it's consistent enough that when they're a five-man unit, they're tough to stop. And that's when they're at their best. Coming through the neutral zone, if you have Roman Josi up in the rush, Matthias Ekholm, everyone's kind of activated in the game and working together. They're just too good.
The fact that you could make a case, though, that it may be Kyle Turris who just showed up, what does that say about his ability to just fit right in?
Well, that's the whole thing. It's not just that he's good. He made Kevin Fiala and Craig Smith. Now, remember, Fiala was kind of sputtering at the beginning. I thought Craig Smith has been great all season, but I think Fiala was kind of sputtering. He wasn't the player he is now, that's for sure. And Kyle Turris adding to that line, I mean, he made, by just adding one player, you made three players better. So that's my whole point is, how can you just say Kyle Turris is the best player when you have him playing with Craig Smith, who's playing great right now? I mean, you go through the whole list, right? Forsberg, that goal that he passed back to Yarncroke, I mean, if you get a chance to break that down, he does something with his stick that not too many players can do. I don't really understand it. I've seen it about 20 times, and I still can't understand how he was able to turn his stick around backwards and make a backhand pass on his forehand of the stick as a lefty when he's a right-hand shot. They're doing stuff that's pretty impressive.
After knocking it out of thin air. I mean, like, it's just it's one of the great assists I've ever seen. Hal Gale joining us here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. He had Coach Lavi had Nick Bonino on the top line there. He did not put Jofa back together right away. Is there what was the strategy behind that, in your opinion? Was it the matchup? Was it guys getting back into the lineup? What do you think the strategy there was for that?
Honestly, I think he didn't want to disrupt two lines that were working. He loves the Turris line, and Lavi loves the really liked the way that Forsberg, Yarncroke, and Aberg line was playing. I think with those guys, Aberg showed a burst, and he hasn't. I don't think Aberg has been all that stellar, but on that line, he looks good, and he looked good again last night. So Lavi doesn't want to rock the boat. And the beauty of having a guy like Nick Bonino is you can put him anywhere on the line. He looked good with that line. I mean, he made some plays. He's so smart on the forecheck that once he gets the puck, he can counter and get guys like Johansson and Arvidsson. He can give them the puck off the great plays he makes on the forecheck. So they love his flexibility, having Bonino go anywhere they want him. And he mixed in well with that line. So why break up two lines when, you know, you can kind of create another line with Bonino on the left wing?
I guess we don't know this for certain, but we would expect to see UC Saros tonight in net. How important would it be for him to put together back-to-back quality starts for the Nashville club and really just give a little bit more confidence to those days and nights when Pekka has to sit?
Yeah, I think confidence is huge for a goalie, and I think you're right. A win tonight and playing well will give him a huge shot in the arm and make him feel pretty good. The Preds need to play well in front of them. They did play well in front of him, and he had a good game in Dallas, and everything went well in that game. He's going to be tested, though. He was tested, and he looked good. He looked sharp. It's not all going to be smooth sailing. So whether he gets the win or not, he's got to fight through that. That's the hard part of being a backup goalie, and part of the learning process, I think, is that you're going to be faced with the back-to-back games, and it's going to be tough, and you're going to have to take a lump sometimes. You know, it's not always going to be easy. Hopefully he gets some confidence from a win. But either way, he's got to get out there and do his job, and that's part of the growing process as well.
Hal Gill joining us here. Certainly Edmonton tonight and then Calgary on Saturday. The problem for Edmonton has been, obviously, Cam Talbot not playing their goaltender. That's been a part of it. But UC Saros is going to face some offensive weaponry tonight. And then, of course, Pekka Rinne back in net, I'm assuming, on Saturday. What sort of challenges offensively do these two squads offer? Edmonton sort of underachieving this year so far.
Yeah, well, Edmonton, they scare me because they haven't been doing what they can. But, you know, McDavid's got 39 points. You know, he's a highlight reel waiting to happen. You know, Draisaitl hasn't been the player he can be, but he can snipe. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, they just traded for Mike Camilleri, and he can snipe. I mean, they have a lot of weapons. I think it's a matter of time before they kind of come together. But and they've been playing better. Their record doesn't show what they've been playing the last five games. They've been solid, and they're just coming off a 7-2 victory over Columbus. So it's a scary team, and they can do some damage. So you have to be. It's not just rolling in and beating up on a team that's down because their goalie's out.
Hal, I'm just curious, after a game gets out of hand and then the other team kind of fights back and tries to get chippy, what are the guys saying after you know something like that happens and Scotty Hartnell's kind of flipping guys in the face, and it had to have been a good scene to win a game like that, but what are they saying afterward?
Well, that's when you have a team toughness and you can kind of go through a game like that, that it makes you puff your chest a little more. If you get, it's kind of there's a story behind every game, and stats don't show it, and it's hard to quantify. But when you have a guy like Scott Hartnell in the lineup who goes down the line and kind of flicks guys in the face and little jabs, and no one really does anything, it sends a message to both benches. And it's a great message if you're with the Preds, and it's the worst message ever if you're with Vancouver. It's just, you know, that it's a slap in the face, and everyone can stare at the other team in the eye and know that you have the upper hand. That's why I think a guy like Cody McLeod is so valuable to this Preds team, is because when you have a guy like that and you have that aura on your team that you're tougher and that you can compete with anyone when it comes down to toughness. You're never scared of a team. And when you get a 7-1 game like that, you're not afraid to have a little swagger with it. And that's usually when it rears its head, is when the game's out of hand and you're just fighting for pride. And you have a guy like Scott Hartnell doing those little jabs. It's an awesome message when you're on the right side of that message, I guess.
Skillsy, man, always a pleasure. Hal Gill, love listening to you work, man. We appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Hal Gill there. And also want to remind people, don't miss our Predators watch party tonight at Frisky Frogs, located at 1530 DeMumbrian Street near the top of the hill there. Jared and the GM will be broadcasting live from 2 to 6 and hanging out afterwards as your Nashville Predators take on Western Conference foe Edmonton. Plus, you'll have a chance to win tickets to an upcoming Preds home game as well. I know they gave away some last night. They'll do that again today. So when we come back, we'll dive into what happened last night. Look ahead to the Oilers as well. Travis Haney, Braden Gall, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You're listening to The Game, ESPN 102.5 The Game, live from the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Link and Mount Juliet. You still have about 10 minutes left to go. So tweet at 102.5 The Game a reason why someone in your life deserves a $100 gift card for a Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa. Obviously, this time of year, we're all a little stressed out, and everybody deserves a little rest and relaxation in their life. So creativity, stories, whatever, tweet at 102.5 The Game. You still got about 5-10 minutes left to go, and we'll pick a winner here before the end of the show. 7-1 last night, and as my former colleague and former co-host would say, a beer game for the Predators last night as they destroy Vancouver. Ryan Johansson back on the ice. Scott Hartnell back on the ice. Gifts galore.
I was going to say,
gifts galore, excuse me.
The more, now that we've had 4 hours to kind of think and reflect on last night, that will probably go down as a top five weird game of the year, right? You got a mid-ice goal, another couple of goofy goals, maybe two of the best assists of the season with Johansson and the late one from Forsberg.
Yep.
A broken stick, part of which winds up in the netting, and a little skirmish toward the end of the game. I mean, that, and to go 7-1. So we mentioned the low-hanging fruit now that the Preds and the Titans have scored the same amount of points this week on the West Coast.
We didn't mention that fruit enough, by the way.
I wonder, by the end of this trip,
ooh,
do the Titans in two games score more than the Preds in three games?
I mean, the odds are absolutely. If that doesn't happen,
this is a heck of a prop bet.
All right, if we wake up Monday morning, Preds goals in this three game stretch versus Titans points in the Cardinals Niners game.
Because you said there's going to be more goals tonight for the Preds.
I think they could score with
five or six tonight.
I think
maybe
they could score. I mean, they've got 20 goals in their last four games.
Five's kind of been the magic number. A lot of 5-3, 5-2 type games.
They've scored at least 3 goals in 17 of their last 18. They've scored.
So let's give them 5 tonight. Let's give them 3 Saturday. So that's 15. Do the Titans score more than 7, 8 points?
Yeah, Titans get more than 8 points. I mean, I would take the Titans in this prop bet. But the point of this is that we're even having this conversation
exactly
is a problem
exactly
for the Titans. Oh my God, that's pretty good. I hadn't thought about that, and it was 7 goals versus 7 points. They've already matched each other.
But now we can advance now we got some projectable numbers. Maybe we'll think more about this and get back
Cardinals,
into it tomorrow. Well, we'll know what the Preds we'll have another
number,
another metric.
I think the
second data point for the Preds.
The Cardinals' defense, I think, is significantly better than the Niners' defense. Now, there's some young, talented players for the
Niners.
Thinking
your way through this analytically,
which is really pathetic for the Titans out there. I mean, really, honestly,
that's what I'm saying.
This is kind of a really pathetic conversation if you're a Titans fan. Like the fact that we have to sit here and say, well, more hockey goals or more football points. That shouldn't be a conversation that happens in real life with between two people that have reasonable thought processes.
If they get to 7 again tonight, I could start to lean toward the Preds.
They're not going to get to 7. 7 is an insane number. I mean, really, you should in theory, this should be like a Preds plus 10 point spread against the Titans, right? Like even before last night and before the Cardinals game, if you said, well, 3 Preds games, 2 Titans games, you would go Titans minus 15, right? I mean, 25 points.
But now with what we know, maybe that number is down toward about 10.
I think it's Titans minus 10. Now which one are you taking? Because you know you're taking
That's
Titans.
That's a pretty good number.
You're taking Titans because again, this would require the Predators to score 7 or 8 or 9 goals to even have this be a conversation.
So we'll set it right now. We'll call it 9.5. And let's figure it out. Let's see the way it plays out the rest of the weekend.
Titans minus 9.5. Total West Coast swing for both teams. Okay. I'm taking the Titans. Like, if we're doing an honest...
Let's see what the live line right now is 9.5. Let's see what it is tomorrow morning when you and I are back here. It could creep on down.
Oh, my God. How is that a thing that could actually be a conversation?
It speaks to one offense that's working and one that is not.
Yeah, and listen, I'm assuming that Marcus Mariota is going to play. We talked a lot about Jimmy Garoppolo today and the Niners and the job that Kyle Shanahan and that offense has done with him just in 2 games. I mean, they've gone from one of the worst offenses in the NFL from a yards per play standpoint to one of the best offenses in the NFL. From a yards per play standpoint, which again is I don't want to speak for you, but it's one of my favorite numbers statistics when trying to analyze football on any level. Yards per play is one of the most effective ways to measure offensive and defensive efficiency. And the bottom line is they're at 6 yards a play, which would be 3rd in the NFL under Jimmy Garoppolo. So right now, that to me is the real place. I think the Titans offense has heard enough of this. I think they're going to play well on offense. Call it a gut feel, whatever you want to call it. I think they're gonna.
Well, if they get to 20 points in this game, it's gonna be awfully difficult for the Preds to keep up with that pace.
Yes. Now I'm just talking about the Niners game, but I agree with you. Yes, the Preds will have difficulty scoring 13 goals.
I would think Sunday would wind up being a 24-13 kind of game.
So right back to the way they were winning games before for the Titans.
I would think that the running lanes that were not there last week will be there. I know we had.
I tend to agree.
Brian Murphy on earlier from KNBR in San Francisco, and he was a little bit more upbeat about the Niners defense than I think you and I are.
There's some young, talented players there,
I don't see a lot of these issues. We probably have not given enough credit to Arizona defensively for a lot of issues that they created for the Titans last week, exacerbated by all of the issues that we have mentioned. But Arizona, 2 physical corners, good up front. That's a tough test. I don't think, and you've said this all week, I don't think that's what they're going to see with the Niners. I think they will be able to run the ball.
Yeah.
I am curious to see, again, how does that break down?
Yeah, I think defensively this is a much more interesting challenge than than you would have thought looking at the 49ers on the schedule all season, because now Carlos Hyde with a quarterback and a balanced offense is a more effective player at running the football.
But he mentioned those receivers. I mean,
yeah, there's a bunch of no names out there.
Aldrick Robinson and
SMU, baby.
Marquise Goodwin,
Texas?
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't get a Trent Taylor.
Louisiana Tech. Yeah. Nerd alert.
Well, that's what we do.
Yeah, I think for whatever reason, call it a hunch, I think the offense is going to find some space to move. And I think they're going to limit Mariota and keep him in the pocket, short passing game, and run the football 35 times.
Could you believe the way that the radio guy, Brian Murphy, was talking about Garoppolo?
It was the second coming of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ playing quarterback.
Lord and Savior Joe Montana in the Bay Area.
For the Niners, yep.
I had to look down and remind myself that this was a two-game sample size.
But he is legit, though. I mean, I played him in my fantasy league last week. He's a legit player.
When you have watched nothing for the first, 10 games, and then suddenly at the end of the 11th game, this guy comes in and you go, oh, we actually have something to watch and talk about.
Well, we'll set that line tomorrow morning because we'll know what happens at Edmonton tonight with the Predators. It'll be very. I am actually legit now. I'm rooting for them to win like the Titans, like 8-2. Like I want them to win 8-2 over San Francisco so we can actually look at the Preds and having scored more goals on a West Coast swing than the Titans did points in two NFL stinking football games. Julian Council, our producer, who is our winner for a Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa $100 gift card.
Our winner is Jason Limbacher. He had put a submission in yesterday, didn't choose him, so here you go, Jason. He tweeted at 1025 The Game, this future epidemiologist deserves a win. She put herself through grad school, working full-time, and she put together a wedding while doing so. Plus, she married me. So congratulations, Jason. Your wife will be getting a $100 gift card to A Moment's Peace in Day Spa.
Jason, also a member of our fantasy league. Maybe you should work on your fantasy skills instead of tweeting at 1025 The Game. Maybe that should happen.
We need to talk more about
congratulations.
We got to talk more about our hockey fantasy league at some point during this week.
Cell Block 303 tomorrow. Traded me Ryan Johansson. That to me is traitorous behavior. I don't understand. And don't ask Sean Henry where he's at in the standings. He doesn't want to talk about
it. He's propped up my whole season.
He doesn't want to talk about
it.
For Travis Haney, my name is Braden Gall. Thanks for listening, everybody. 3D coming up next. Julian Council producing, intern Calvin as well. This has been ESPN 102.5 The Game.